Now we have a district rep. Good morning. I'd like to call to order the Finance and Administration Committee meeting of November 7th. First of all, I'd like to start with a safety contact, Mr. Doherty.
Thank you, and good morning, Chairman Acosta, members of the board. Just as a reminder, in the event the building emergency alarm goes off or fire alarm, please either exit through the door you came in or use one of the doors on either side of the screen. And our designated meet point is across 5th Street on the lawn in front of the National Building Museum. Also, if an AED or automatic external defibrillator is needed, we have one right outside at the security booth. Our safety contact this morning basically wanted to provide a reminder that it's autumn, but I may do two brief ones. But autumn is certainly one of the most beautiful times of the year. We'd like to remind you to steer clear when you're driving of wet leaves. The fall foliage, although beautiful when it's in the trees, but once the leaves start falling, they may get wet from the rain and become a serious driving hazard. Wet leaves are slippery and reduce traction. Two, make adjustments for the light. Shorter days mean shorter light, making it more difficult to see pedestrians, cyclists, and children playing in the late afternoon. Be on the lookout as if, you know, in case night vision is a problem, and adjust your driving times to drive in well-lit areas. And third, watch for frost. Dipping nighttime temperatures bring frost to our windshields and roads. Keep a windshield scraper or a small broom handy, and decelerate or gently brake when approaching bridges and overpasses. And on another note that was brought to me, just as an extra reminder, be cautious of bicyclists that aren't wearing helmets, safety vests, so that they're seen. We're seeing more bicycle occurrences, and certainly just as a reminder, please be alert to those bicyclists. And when I worked on the West Coast, I learned a new term that was called being doored, and that's when somebody's in a bike lane and opens their car door just as a bicyclist approach, and then the bicyclist becomes airborne. And as we have these bike lanes, we'd like you not to park in the bicycle lanes, and I see now DC's even tweeting those that do park in bike lanes, just as a reminder. So that would conclude my safety contact for this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. Before us is a agenda as proposed by staff. Are there any questions about the agenda or comments? If not, we'll move forward with the agenda as presented. Next up is the approval of the minutes of October 10th, 2013. Many thanks to Mrs. Hines for running the meeting last month. I would entertain a motion to accept the minutes.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Okay. We have a move and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? The minutes are passed. Today we have two informational items. We'll review the FY14 quarterly operating budget and receive an update on our capital progress from Assistant Manager Bitar. I'd like to note that we finished a quarter on a positive note on both operating and capital budgets, better than last year on both fronts. All this is good news and puts us in a good position as we enter the upcoming months, which will present some uncertainties for us that Deputy General Manager Carol Kissel will review in her presentation. As you know, this does not include the impacts of the government shutdown from last month. This is basically the first quarter results, and that will be presented in our October report in terms of the shutdown impacts. So with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Kissel.
And how much is the first quarter?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm pleased to report that through the first quarter of fiscal 14, our operating budget has a positive net position of about $12 million. Operating revenues were slightly above budget, and operating expenses were under budget by about 2%. On the ridership front, total ridership for the quarter on all modes was about 90 million trips, which is almost 2%. Up almost 2% compared to last year, and just 0.2% below our budgeted forecast. Total rail ridership was up 1% over last year, but about 1.5% below our budget projection. Rail ridership is nearly identical to last year by line and by station, and weekends improved over last year primarily due to good weather and a few large events such as the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington. On Metro Bus, our overall improvement in ridership performance was driven largely by Metro Bus. During the first quarter, bus carried more than a million more trips than last year. Metro bus ridership is up 2% compared to the budgeted projections for the quarter. Part of the gain in Metro bus is due to the successful new ride free on bus program for District of Columbia students. By the end of September, we're averaging about 23,000 student trips per school day. And bus ridership is also doing well on weekends, as rail is, and it's up 5% over last year, primarily driven by strong Sunday ridership. Metro Access is also seeing a steady increase in ridership, up 4% compared to the budget. New Metro Access fare calculator that was implemented recently is reducing fares. Average fare paid has dropped by about 5% for Metro Access users. Total registrations are up about 11% over the same period last year. And we are, of course, monitoring these trends closely in Access. We're pursuing several new initiatives to manage future paratransit growth, including an effort in Maryland for customers traveling to human services organizations, and one in D.C. for kidney dialysis patients. There's a positive trend continuing in parking. Overall parking utilization has improved compared to last year. We're up from about 79% to about 82% utilization. And then from a revenue perspective, total operating revenue, as I mentioned, was about 3% above, or $3 million above budget in the first quarter, about 1.5%. Operating revenues were boosted by a combination of three main factors: the higher bus ridership, strong performance during the quarter for advertising and fiber optic revenue, and then the recognition of additional revenue that's primarily attributable to increased use of smart trip cards. So we're well up above 90% now. And the auto load feature that is a new feature for customers. So moving to expenses. Expenses were about $8.5 million, favorable to budget, about 2% below budget. Personnel expenses were unfavorable by about $3.4 million. Primarily due to increased wages and overtime attributable to primarily the labor cost impacts of the collective bargaining agreement settlements and overtime. We continue to see positive impacts from our efforts to manage overtime. Overtime costs during the first quarter of fiscal 14 were $2 million less than overtime costs during the same quarter last year. The major cost driver, again, in overtime this year is the preparation of the rail cars for the opening of the Silver Line. During the first quarter, we also experienced some favorability in non-personnel expense line items, which helped to offset those personnel cost expenses, savings relative to the budget in fuel and propulsion, as well as service contract line items were experienced. And as the committee discussed last month and in September, as we're proceeding through fiscal 14 and developing the budget for fiscal 15, we're looking at some of the key cost drivers and budget line items, and we'll be making recommendations to right-size the budget line items as part of the 15 proposed budget. We are also examining the possibility of implementing some budget right-sizing for the second half of fiscal 14 to better align our budget with where we actually expect to incur the expenses. So one quarter of performance, positive performance, is significant, but it's not necessarily a trend for the whole year. So we will be continuing to monitor expenses, revenue, and ridership, and using the information we gain and the analysis to inform our recommendations for both the fiscal 14 budget and, of course, the fiscal 15 proposed budget. I'll turn it over to Carol now to talk about the look ahead for the remainder of fiscal 14.
Okay, great. And I want to just start a little bit by talking about the rearview mirror a little bit about the federal shutdown, which happened not necessarily in the first quarter. So you'll see that in our second quarter report, but I wanted to give you an understanding of, you know, some of the things that occurred during that federal shutdown. Then I wanted to spend a little time talking about a couple of the other risks that we see in the forecast, how we're managing those, and how we'll, you know, modify our actions as necessary in order to fall well within our budget, our adopted budget, and within the 2% target that we're looking for. So as far as the federal shutdown, as all of you know, it occurred in October 1st to October 16th. It was 11 days, and the impact in terms of revenue was about $5.5 million loss for Metro. In terms of ridership, the ridership impact was about a 13% reduction in ridership, which is equivalent to about 1.7 million trips. And so as we, these are uncontrollable events for that happened to Metro, but we have some ability to control what we can control. So what we did from a management perspective was gather daily reports that happened to monitor the situation. We looked at how to reschedule our eight-car consists to accommodate for the lower capacity and demand, which actually lowered fuel costs and things like that. So anything that we could have done, we did in terms of impacting cost, variable cost. As you know, much of our costs are fixed. About 70% of our costs are labor, and those are things that we cannot change. So in terms of offsetting costs during that time period, it was probably about a quarter of $1 million that we were able to reduce in terms of our expenses. So we actually we looked at ridership, you know, by line and monitor the situation best we can. In terms of going forward, we do know that in January there could be a possibility of another shutdown. So some of the lessons learned that we picked up, and this time we will apply again. But basically much of our costs are fixed, and we would just have to anticipate getting a preview of how to manage, doing the same things that we did last time, managing our consists, managing our scheduling, reducing any of the variable costs that we can in order to prepare for that. We don't expect that to happen again, hopefully. We expect the partners in Congress to determine how to come to a conference on funding levels, you know, before December. But in any event, that was the report on the federal shutdown. In terms of things that are coming forward that we are looking at, the Silver Line will be coming on board on the second half of our fiscal year. I will tell you that we have planned a revenue number in our budget that is about $2.5 million of revenue, anticipating a month that the Silver Line will drive in our budget. And I will leave a lot of the detail associated with the Silver Line to Rob Troop, who in the next committee will be talking about that in detail. But we are, that's the amount of revenue that we had assumed in our budget for Silver Line. In terms of other risks that we're looking at, again, the funding levels that will happen in Congress in terms of their full year appropriation deadline, which I think happens mid-December. You know, we're hoping that gets resolved. The impact to us is just the impact on the continuation of sequestration. And as you heard last spring when you adopted the FY14 budget, we had provided a forecast and a worst case scenario, and we ranged from anywhere from $5 to $10 million of loss of revenue over the year period. Based upon the first quarter projections that we see now, we are on target on the low end of the sequestration impacts, which is a good thing, and we're able to absorb that now. But of course, we'll be observing the second quarter and then understanding what other business mitigation plans that we need to put in place probably by January and February if that actually continues to rise. But I suspect what will happen is sequestration continues, that many of the federal agencies will look to other ways to close their budgets as they did last time, rather than the impact of employment, which, as you know, is a big driver of our ridership. So we're hoping that that will continue. The other risk that we're monitoring is the transit benefit. As you know, in our FY14 budget, we have assumed that the large ridership base of about 40% of our federal workforce who are using transit benefits will continue to get the $245 a month of the transit benefit. That will expire at the end of December, and we are hoping that the federal government continues that benefit at the levels that we have planned for in our budget. That is a risk, as you know, last year, that we had a gap where the transit benefit was reduced. We had to work through that, and then the transit benefit was raised. So our government relations group, Regina Sullivan, in particular, is working very diligently, with our delegation in order to make sure that the commuter benefit continues on after December. And she could probably, if you have any questions, I'm sure she can address the detail on that. And then finally, the last risk that we always look at is weather. And as you know, we have assumed in our budget, a couple of weather events, which is always typical that we have in the winter. We have not assumed a revisit of Snowmageddon, I guess is what we called it back when we were closed for a good part of a week. But so if we do have a severe weather issue, we have no plan in the budget for that. Based upon some of the board input for FY15, we will be putting together a little bit more of a cushion, if you will, in anticipation of a weather event. And you'll see that in the general manager's budget as we talk about it next month. So some of the things that we've talked about here, I'm confident that we're able to power through and manage the budget at the levels that you've approved, keep within our 2% target. The first quarter, as Tom said, is not a trend, but we're managing the budget at the levels that we expect to, so, and managing those risks. So that's it. Let me talk about the next steps, and then we'll hand it over to Rodrigo. On the next steps, you see a very broad calendar here that takes us to budget discussions and then a budget adoption later in the month. This Friday, you'll be getting a very detailed schedule from us, which talks about the actions that will happen every month. So, for example, in November or in December, we'll have the Finance Committee. We'll have the General Manager's proposed budget that he will be proposing. We'll have larger discussions on that. On December 19th at the board meeting, the board will authorize public hearings in order to be in time for having those stakeholder outreaches that we need to do in order to discuss fares and any other changes, as well as to reveal our capital improvement program and get customer and stakeholder outreach and comments on that. Late December, early January, we have legal requirements for public hearings. Again, they'll be announced in different newspapers, various languages, making sure that we have outreach that's appropriate, and we'll provide notices for that. And then in early February, public hearings will take place. Late January, early February, the rider survey will be open to the public. We'll have that happening then. We'll also have Title VI public outreach and a participation process that will be very outlined in the memo that you get. Late February, the rider survey will be closed. Outreach and participation at that point will have been completed, and all inputs will be provided to WMATA, where we will then prepare a Title VI analysis and report. That report will then be shared with the board in sometime early to mid-March. A staff report will be there, the equity analysis that discusses the output that we've defined, and the outreach will all be provided to the board with enough time for the board to actually have a proper review of that. We're anticipating about 2 weeks. And we then assume a budget adoption March, April. Right here you see that it's a budget adoption in March, but in the memo we are looking at possibly, in order to get enough time to review the outreach, the staff report we may be adopting in April. So I just wanted to make you aware of that. We're reviewing that now. So that's just a snapshot of what the schedule will be, and hopefully has all the components that we think are going to be very much required in order for the board to make a decision on a budget.
Thank you. Before we move forward on the capital budget, I'd like to see if there are any questions. Mr. Bolger.
Carol, thank you. Can you comment on the when the government shut down, as many of you may know, the District of Columbia couldn't make their quarterly payment. Was there any reverberation that the board needs to know about that default or many defaults?
Right. So that's correct. As many of you know, the jurisdictions pay at the beginning of a quarter. And so this happened to be at the beginning of a quarter, the federal shutdown, October 1. And as a result, the district was unable to make a operating payment because of the constrictions that they have related to the federal government and how they are governed. The district did, however, make their debt payment to Metro, and so they made some level of payment, but there was a larger operating payment that was not made. That payment was made as soon as the federal shutdown was lifted, and the district was able to do that. You know, 2 weeks later, we actually received a payment from the District of Columbia. In January, if there's a possibility of another shutdown, the only good news is that it would be happening after the payments are due on January 1. So, I mean, I have to shed light on that because it is good news, and so it doesn't have any real impact to us. During that time, because the payment was large, we did monitor our cash position, and we had no issue making our payroll and making our obligations. But if it had continued more than 11 days, we probably would have had an issue. So
is there a lesson learned here? Is it a number of days? We had 11 days. This district couldn't make the payment. Is there like a projection of the going forward that we need to know or keep in mind, like 15 days, 20 days?
No, not that soon. I mean, I think in terms of if it had gone on for a long time, I think the analysis that we had done, that we would have been in a very tight spot by the spring. So if this happened in October and the federal government was shut down until March, then obviously we would not be able to meet our obligations. That is a low probability, and no one would have been able to make obligations. So the lessons learned there, we did do that analysis because we were concerned about, you know, what the scenario was. So. That's correct.
Mr. Downs?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed the overtime forecast for the first quarter. If memory serves me right, this would be the third budget year where we have had a significant miss on the budgeted amount for overtime. Mm-hmm. And I would make two suggestions. One, that the staff make a presentation at the next safety committee meeting about the distribution of that overtime to safety critical positions beyond the fatigue management issue. There are still lingering questions about the management of that amount of overtime in safety critical. The other is that there seems to be some significant failure in assumptions about forecasting overtime. I think we forecast overtime based on what we think is a manageable and safe level of the utilization of our employees' overtime. And we're failing at that. At the current burn rate, we'd have almost another $30 million overrun in overtime for this fiscal year, partially offset by vacancies. Mm-hmm. But vacancies are a driver in overtime as well, and there's kind of a chicken and an egg there and an analysis about why we have such a lag time and difficulty about managing our vacancies against those work demands that are built into our budget assumptions. In other words, I think it's time for, as part of the next Finance Committee, review a more detailed review of the assumptions behind overtime, the mitigation steps that we can take. Part of it may be additional position funding. Part of it may be different ways of doing the work. But I think we risk becoming numb to this level of overtime, and I don't think it's healthy to do that.
Certainly, on the safety critical positions, we will show that. But let me just briefly discuss what management is looking to do. What Tom had indicated is we have an overtime budget which we are over exceeding based upon plan. We have a labor wages budget which is underperforming, and to some extent, some of that underperforming is a result of vacancies, but it's how we plan onboarding employees. So I'm calling it the lapse rate, but the lapse rate is defined as I'm expecting to hire 20 technicians, and they're all going to start on July 1, and that's how the budget is input into the plan. Now, in reality, they don't all get onboarded at July 1. They get onboarded over time. So what we're doing is we're not accurately reflecting our onboard workforce planning and how really the people are onboarded in our plan. What we are suggesting to do, and we are doing this now, the second half of the year, we would do a reprogramming in our labor budget, and the reprogramming would take the assumption on how we onboard labor and take those underruns and move them over to overtime, where that is happening, not exposing safety critical positions, being careful of that, and then moving the budget. So it's a zero-sum game, but it's now aligning the budget actually where it's occurring. And so we have to be careful about that because we don't want to affect safety critical positions and include overtime where we're now reaching, we don't want to expose a 14-hour, shift, and we have to be careful about that. We intend to do that work. We're in the process of doing that work now to change it for the second half of the year versus now, and so we're analyzing that. So we will come back and tell you what that looks like.
Just following up on that, and I had planned to put this in my budget questions, which I haven't totally formulated yet, but I think we need to be sensitive to this onboarding issue. If we don't hire the people and we have to replace those hours with overtime, that is replacing an entry-level salary with a much higher level salary in many cases, and one that builds into the pension, so we're going to pay for the next 30 years. The net present value could be a significant multiple of what we would be able to pay if we bring the people on. So, hopefully in our budget discussion, we're looking at both equations, part of the equation. We just shouldn't assume the onboarding rate is what it is. I mean, I was a little taken aback with the comment last month about right-sizing the overtime budget. We shouldn't cover up a lot of concerns by that. We really should look at what is the cost-effective way to do our business and not let overtime be a crutch for covering up other issues. Second quick question. Once again, and it's always good news, but you wonder about it, we're well under the budget for fuel and power. Mm-hmm. What is driving that? I mean, why do we always have a little cushion in that account?
Well, one of the reasons is because we were able to put in hedge positions that lock in a fuel budget at what we budgeted at.
Right.
And so that actually is very helpful. We have a treasury group that monitors how to place those hedges. Typically, we put them in place at certain times of the year in anticipation of that. And then the second reason is we have done, I'll use this word, it's probably not a likable word, but we have right-sized the propulsion energy budget the prior year for this year. We brought it down about $10 million because we are not on automatic train control. And since we're on manual, it actually uses less propulsion kilowatts. And so as we manage through that, we are now looking at trying to move that down a little bit more. And so that you'll see that a little bit in the 15 budget as well.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, well, just one suggestion, I think, given this conversation about overtime. I know you're going to present your FY15 budget next month. It probably would make some sense to talk through the assumptions that you're making and any corrections that you've made vis-a-vis lessons learned from previous years and how you're going to accommodate that in the budget. I understand you're going to make a course correction later on this quarter, but but I think it's important that the assumptions are correct. So why don't we move on to the capital budget discussion.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board. Very happy to announce that at this point in time. Happy to announce that at this point in time we're $18 million ahead compared to last year's first quarter. We're well on our way to complete the work schedule as planned. Next slide, please. Next slide. At this point in time, for the first quarter, we have a total expenditures of $137 million out of $996. Next slide. And the main components, as usual, for vehicles and vehicle parts, we are right on target for bus rehabilitations, for bus deliveries and new metro access vehicles, we're right on target. The deliveries for those two are expected to be here on the second half of the year. Next slide. On the bus rehabilitation, we have different programs included in there. Some of them, just to name a few, is the midlife overhauls. We have completed 78 of those. We have engine rebuilds. We have completed 59 of those. And transmission rebuilds, we have completed 72 of those. So all in all, we're on track on that category. For track structures, same thing. We're moving ahead with all the different initiatives there. For example, joint welded, we're 325 out of 1,000, so we're actually a little bit ahead of the curve on that one. We don't have any floating slabs completed. However, prep work has been progressing and is on a schedule. Even though it's reflected as zero at this point in time, the numbers will start, we're going to start coming online on the third quarter. Switches, for example, we completed 10 out of 32 on the yards. So we're moving forward with that and so on and so forth. We have leak mitigation initiatives. We have completed 609 out of a little bit over 2,100. And there's a, could you go back to the picture? That's, those are some examples of the track sewage replacement initiatives and water mitigation initiatives on the left side. Passenger facilities. Passenger facilities, we're right on track on that one. We rehabilitated 3 elevators out of 22. Currently, we have 5 in progress. Escalator rehabilitation, we completed 9. We have about 8 in progress right now. We completed the Pentagon City, the replacement of the last 3 APB breakers out of 9. That's a significant achievement because that allows us to reduce the parts and components that are required to be in our inventory. If you remember from years past, APB breakers were known for being troublesome and very difficult to get parts, and we needed to get into reverse engineering efforts and stuff like that just to keep them running. So those escalators are out of the system now. On CIP 185, which is the big escalator replacement project, that one is moving right ahead. We just started with the first 2 in Van Ness. It's actually a little bit of ahead of schedule. The contractor is working very well with us. They have been very reactive and very proactive with everything that we need. And we're looking to have 6 total replacements this year. Next. Those pictures over there are coming out of the Pentagon station. These are the ones that we've replaced. It was a really good project. The Pentagon officials were very happy with the final product. If you haven't had the chance to ride the escalators, the picture at the bottom right, that's the finished product over there, which is a huge improvement from what it used to be. Next, please. Maintenance and other facilities. Last time that I was here with you, 2 months ago, this was an area where we were having certain issues with permitting and everything back then. Now I'm happy to report that Royal Street Bus Garage, for example, it was awarded about 10 days ago. So, and the delivery is sometime in the summer of 2015. Southern, the notice to proceed, now let me go back, the RFP was put on the street on the 24th of October. We're expecting the bids and the packages to come back to us in early February, and we are anticipating notice to proceed around April timeframe. So, again, moving forward with that one. Test track and commissioning facility. You can put the next. Thank you. That one is the commissioning facility is scheduled for May delivery. The track itself is scheduled for November delivery. Those pictures show some of the progress at this point in time. The structure is up. Some of the walls are coming up. Since we took that picture, I think the entire south side is already in place. The issues with GSX were resolved, so everything is moving now. Then if we go to maintenance and equipment, in this area, we're also moving right on track. Track circuits don't show any kind of progress at this point in time for the first quarter, but that's actually on track. We do these kind of activities on the second and on the fourth quarter, so it's not that we're falling behind on that. Replacement of power cables continue to be on track, 25,000 out of 80,000. And the one that I want to touch base on is on the event recorders. We finally fixed the problems with the vendor. We have 2 units being tested currently. The testing is scheduled, if everything goes according to plan, to be completed by the end of November. If successful, production will start immediately, and we're targeting the completion of the 4,000 series fleet by the end of the fiscal year. I didn't have a picture of the event recorder itself, but this is a diagram of how it looks. Just to give you an idea, it just looks like the CPU of a computer, type of thing. But I'm very happy to see the results so far. We're moving in the right direction. And the expenditures are tracking according to what we estimated. That concludes my presentation. If you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Bitar. Mr. Downey, then Mr. Giancola, and Mr. Goldman.
I have a comment rather than a question. Could you put one of the charts back up?
Sure. Any chart?
Anyone, yeah. I just wanted to draw attention. Okay. Finally, if you look up at the top, what we are measuring is what we're delivering,
yes,
not what we're spending. Yes. And that is a big, big breakthrough from where we've been in the past. That we can see what we spent, but we also see relative to what we expected, what we're delivering. I just wanted to ask, in the bottom right where you show status, and I'm pleased to see that every chart, every line is green. We'll watch, try to keep it that way. Is that status with respect to deliverables?
Sorry, did you say that?
Is that status relative to deliverables?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it
okay.
is.
Okay, good. We're measuring the right thing, and if we measure the right thing, we'll do the right thing.
So, Giancola?
That being said, I'm not really happy with this chart. what does it mean? I mean, I'm assuming, and clarify for me, that the 4 major deliverables shown are specific NTSB requirements.
In this category.
Okay.
Yes.
We have nothing on actual with regard to examining traffic circuits, if you look at it. We're certainly doing well in the power cables as I read it. And then if you look down at the quaternary, to me, the last deliverable onboard event recorders, seems like we're kind of behind. So, I mean, is the workload equally done each quarter, or have you got some sort of program where you do so many, you know, it may not be equal each quarter. Maybe toward the end of the year you get most of these things done. So can you explain a little bit of that? Because the status column to me showing a green color doesn't really tell me anything.
Sure.
Sorry, Mort, I didn't mean to.
Sure. The green color is the way that we're looking at the project according to the program itself, the entire schedule as a whole. Depending on the project, it's going to vary. Some projects have continued deliveries, and we just break it down by 12 for the total of the year, and that's how we monitor the progress of it, or by 4 if we are going to present quarterly information, and that's understandable. In the particular one over there for the event recorders, we needed to go back to the drawing board, and even though we are tracking according to the schedule, there was a lot of engineering done on the front end, so therefore we don't have installations. So 5% is validation of the design. Once we validate the design and we start into production, then you're going to see a ramp up on completion of the project based on the installation on the 4000 series fleet.
So
did I answer?
That's the rest of the story.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Mr. Goldman?
Mr. Bitar, I just want to continue our conversation from September on comparing the capital program from FY13 and then what's in FY14. Could we go back to the third chart, which is titled Capital Programs Investments to Date? It was about the third chart from the beginning.
One more.
Here we go. Okay. On the first line, vehicle parts shows 211 for FY14. In the materials that Ms. Kissel provided me from our prior conversation, this showed that in FY13, we spent about the same amount, $75 million on rail cars and $132 million on buses. Mm-hmm. Is that the same ratio that is behind the line A, vehicle and vehicle parts, for FY14?
Should be the same ratio.
Should be about the same ratio, so about...
If I remember correct, it should be close. Not exact, but it should be close to the same ratio,
We won't be spending more on rail cars in FY14 than in FY13?
Yeah.
We can check that, because I know the information that we sent. I understand the question, and we want to be accurate.
Sure.
So I think you're correct, but I just want to verify that's the case.
I'm asking because I understood we were getting a big rail car delivery coming in. FY14, so I'm trying to understand what's behind the numbers. Well, then we'll get that answer. maybe we pay on Amazon or something. And, second question. From FY13, the biggest capital improvement category was in station and station systems platforms, I guess the red line and blue line. Where is that in the A, B, C, D, E, and F? Is that B?
It should be on infrastructure, right? Passenger facilities, and I think it was in two places.
It's represented in two places. In passenger facilities, which is item F, and also in rail system infrastructure rehab, which is item B.
Okay. Can I ask that you produce for the FY14 data CIP the same kind of crosswalk that you provided for the FY13 that was provided to board members last week?
We can do that.
And then we'll do that. Then we'll have some follow-up questions. Thank you.
Great. Any other questions for staff? If not, thank you, Mr. Bitar, Ms. Kissel.
Thank you.
Any other items to be brought before this committee? Just a quick reminder, next month we'll be focusing on the general manager's budget, FY15 budget. As we mentioned at the October meeting, if you could get your questions in by November 15th, it would be appreciated regarding the discussion you had in October. There'll be future opportunities, however, to raise your questions. If not, this meeting is adjourned.